head into the theater and the usher nods me in. They know me here. I descend down the staircase behind the movie screen that only select people know about. The door at the bottom opens and I walk in. The sound of movie spoilers fill the air. The barkeep has my drink ready and motions me to the back. The rest of the crew are here already. This is my type of place and these are my type of people. Join me as we discuss the inner secrets of cinema. Have a seat in the spoiler room.
And welcome, my friends, to another edition of the spoiler room. Yes, it's kind of insect month here in July, and what appropriate. I mean, last year we had an insect film, as in the Ant-Man and the Wasp, and now we have Spider-Man. Yes, I know spiders aren't... Okay, don't get into me about spiders and being insects. And they're creepy, they're small, and they're creatures. And we have Spider-Man Far From Home, a new MCU film, the first one after all the major events of Endgame. And tonight to talk about this interesting film starring Tom Holland, I have a fantastic person in the spoiler room tonight to discuss it. It is none other... then the lovely Andrew Shearer. Hello, Andrew. How are you, sir?
Yes, hello. Lovely to be lovely. Thank you.
You're welcome, sir.
Yes.
And today, yes, a little bit of a different discussion for you and I, usually with our table for two here discussions, where we are actually discussing a larger, wide-release superhero film. And if you wouldn't mind, Andrew... would you be able to give the synopsis for Spider-Man Far From Home?
Yeah, man. Okay, so Murray Spider-Man is a high school kid, and he's got superpowers, but he just wants to go on his school trip to Italy, right? Or they're going to Europe, so they're doing a couple places, I guess. And he's got this girl he likes, and he's just like, man, I don't want to be a superhero when I'm out there. But then the bad guys are like, oh, yeah, well, you're going to have to do superhero stuff. And he's all, no, okay. But I kind of, and that's pretty much.
That's pretty much it. Now, you mentioned it when we talked offline a bit. You enjoyed Homecoming, you said.
I did. First, what I need to tell everyone listening, all the listeners, is that Spider-Man Into the Spider-Verse, they're not going to make a better Spider-Man than that.
No,
it's not going to happen.
Nope.
It's not going to happen. I don't know if they'll make a better superhero movie than that. I hope I live to see it if that happens. So I need to be clear on that. However, I went out to see all the Spider-Mans. I saw Sam Raimi's Spider-Mans and I saw The Amazing Spider-Man 1 and 2. But I felt Spider-Man Homecoming the best. Mm-hmm. That isn't the best one. That's not Spider-Verse. I loved it. I loved his friends. I liked it. You know, if we can't get a black Spider-Man in one of these, we're at least having a lot of brown people around him, which mm-hmm. is great. And I like the kid, Tom Holland, that plays him. He, you know, he's a good horror director from the 80s. I enjoy his work. But he, you know, playing him as a kid was kind of the way we always thought he should be. And it's great because everybody else is a grown-up. It's kind of the audience for this movie seeing themselves in it. And I like that. And I don't know. It just seemed a little bit lighter-footed than some of the other Marvel movies. So, yeah, I dug it.
Yeah, that's what surprised me with it. I mean, Homecoming, yeah, was lighter. And it's what you wanted. And Tom Holland was like, okay, this is definitely a fitting Spider-Man, especially for the MCU, bringing him home, basically. But here at Far From Home, it is a nice, lighter, more true comic book film, because it felt like you were watching more of a comic book film than what we were getting in the last few heavy additions to the MCU. Not saying those films were bad by any means, but it was nicer to kind of have this fresh start a bit. And you could tell, I mean, there is setup in here, and we'll go into a little bit, you know, for the next storyline. they're going for. But in general, yeah, I really dug the fun tone of this film, and it harkened back to some of those older school teenage films, you know, where they go on a trip and you got the funny shenanigans happening to the guy who just wants to tell the girl who he really likes how he feels. And, you know, there's the awkwardness. And I loved how that was actually more of the main story than him being a superhero and doing all the fighting and stuff. I mean, did you feel that as well, Andrew, that that almost is more of the main story of his teenage awkwardness more so than the, you know, the, hey, I'm a superhero?
Yeah, that's the only way these movies work. That's mm-hmm. the only reason that Homecoming worked for me. And that's the only reason why after you get out of an origin story, which is always more interesting than everything else that it's going to do as a film, because you really kind of go like, oh, where to now, you know? I think it also a lot of that rests firmly on the characters that surround Peter. Mm-hmm. Because Peter, let's face it, even though I like the guy and I like this portrayal of him and all of that, it's about the people around Peter that makes it seem fresh and interesting. Had they not done that, it would have been way, way, way less interesting. And while I don't like this movie as much as Homecoming, I still feel like his thing with MJ, particularly MJ played by Zendaya, mm-hmm. she is one of the best. If you're going to give a female character like no superpower, nothing to do really other than to be, you know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
God, I lived for every single facial expression she made. Her, just the way she holds her chin. God, is great. Great.
Yeah, she's a great actress, and I love her in the role of MJ. Her portrayal of MJ in this is great because it is different than what we've seen of previous MJs. You know, I mean, I know the film is from MCU and they try to pull from source material but I really like the fresh take of, like you mentioned, people around them. I mean, when people first heard Marissa Tomei was going to be Aunt May, people were having Aunt May is supposed to be old or whatnot. But, you know, now it's like, no, it's Marissa Tomei's Aunt May, you know? And then, yeah, all of his friends around him, even the people who don't like Peter, they have a very diverse group of personalities as well as just portrayals around Spider-Man, which was refreshing. And it is, you make a good point. It is the people around him that really make Spider-Man him. I mean, here we've got a guy who just went through in space. He just was part of a major freaking battle with Thanos and Iron Man, sacrificed himself, all of this. And here we have the kid where you would normally think maybe his trip would be, well, now he's going to step up, you know, and be the leader that he needs to be because he's experienced all this. And yet he doesn't, Andrew. He still just wants to be a kid.
Yeah. I mean, it really, what keeps me watching is the fact that they keep the handle on the fact that he is young and the fact that he's got more going on in his life and he doesn't just give over, you know, that's for adults that just, you know, completely give up on everything and just become their job. You know, that's not a thing that kids want to do. So I'm glad that they keep that part, like it stays front and center. You know, it shouldn't be. It should be the main focus and give people something to do besides wait for the next, like, you know, CGI disaster porn,
which you get plenty of in here. You get plenty of CGI shininess in this film, but it is kind of explained away. But still, there's a lot of it in here, as you would get for a superhero film. But what I found interesting is how they addressed in the very beginning the whole age difference thing, which was a question on everybody's mind when Spider-Man got back to high school. Do you feel they explained it away enough that, you know, there is some kids that are different age than what their friends remember them, but yet they're all in high school? I mean, did you think that was good enough that they spent just enough time to go, yeah, okay, here's the way it is, and moved on?
Yeah, I really, like, I so didn't care about that. Like, every time they mentioned Blip, I'm like, God, I don't care. I'm just not one of these guys. I know that the part of the popularity for Marvel Cinematic Universe is the interconnectedness and the frequency in which they're released and all of that. But that's for the, that is for the binge watch TV episodic television culture that we're in.
Right.
I'm not that indie. That's not me at all. I want to be able to sit down and watch a movie. I'm fine if it's a sequel to the one I saw before, but this isn't a sequel to Spider-Man Homecoming just.
No.
It's a sequel to Avengers Endgame, and when I saw the trailers for this thing, Avengers Endgame was only in, had only been in theaters a couple of weeks, and already they're talking about Iron Man's dead in the commercial for Spider-Man.
Right?
I'm like, this is not out on Netflix yet. You can't just tell people that haven't been to see that. You know, it's not even out on DVD yet or whatever. What are you doing here, man? That's what, that was my problem with this movie, really. If it, it just was too, it was, it kept referencing another movie that you had to have seen. Otherwise you're like, why do I care about this Blip? Okay, Iron Man's dead. Okay, all right, I guess he's dead. The thing about Homecoming that was so rad, I didn't see Avenger Age of Ultron. I didn't see it.
Oh, yeah, so Civil War, you mean? Captain America Civil War?
Well, whatever came before Homecoming.
Right, yep.
The beginning of the movie, it's, it goes, this, I'm talking about Homecoming. The
beginning
of the movie, it goes like, oh, there's been this big Avenger battle. Here's the Ultron's head. And these guys, construction workers, are finding it. Michael Keaton finds it. And, like, that told me everything I need to know.
Oh, yeah, I'm yeah.
Like, okay, so Avenger won a battle, and this is the Ultron's head? He still didn't say what his age was, but we're apparently never going to find out what Ultron's age was. It's total bullshit. And so there was very simple. In, out, move on, tell me the movie.
Right.
Home, Far From Home had a cool story. Fine villain, all that stuff, really interesting stuff. God, it kept on with that. I didn't care. I know people really care. And I've seen online everybody's all like, oh, well, no, technically, da 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 da. I'm like, come on, man. Is the movie good, yes or no?
Well, the, and the way it's written, you wouldn't, you didn't necessarily need so many back references to Endgame for it. The passing of Tony Stark, yes, because Tony Stark was such a part of Homecoming that, you know, that kind of made sense, you know, that the passing of Tony Stark, how that would be a big deal in Spider-Man's life. But the rest of the events or whatnot, you didn't really need to know. They didn't need to. Yeah, we're jumping around a bit. The spoiler end credit sequence have the alien guys having posed as Nick Fury all along. And Nick Fury has actually been up in a space state. You know, really didn't need all that, but at least that was at the end credits. But it was still so much reference back to Endgame. And this is the problem that I have with some of these MCU films is that with the references, you're going to get lost with these later films and all the references. At least Spider-Man Far From Home has enough story here, I think, where you don't need to see Endgame, but you will be curious and miss out with some of the a lot of the references that they keep jumping back to. But I don't think you need to see it nearly as much as some of the past MCU films. Because at its core, it's just a teenager's on a field trip with road trip story for these for you wrapped around in a superhero shell of sorts. And I like that. I like that spirit because you got the comedy in here, which I thought hit. One of the things my son didn't quite care for, only because he's very sympathetic or empathetic, however you want to feel. He connects very much with the character. When the character is in awkward situations, it gets him awkward. So he starts to not enjoy the film as much because you're feeling awkward for the main character. And we get a lot of awkward moments in here that are normal teenage awkward moments. Did that surprise you a little bit? Just how much they worked that into it, considering, again, where Spider-Man has come from the past two films.
Yeah. Oh, don't show him any of those Fockers movies. That's like all they are. It's like embarrassing things happening to people. Awkward shit. No, I thought it was very consistent. You know, it never lost itself in those little moments. It never forgot to keep those in. from the, you know, where their hands almost touch and where they almost kiss, you know, and get interrupted, things like that. When he's got to change clothes and things, and all that. My big gripe with a lot of these like movies that are for kids, not for kids, but you know what I'm saying? Like
young adults.
They sell,
yeah.
They sell Halloween costumes for kids that are like 3
yeah.
and 4. You can't take them in this movie, you know? So I like it that there's just this window of opportunity. If they're going to sell and market stuff to little kids or younger kids, I love it that anytime the movies seem to be prepped and made for them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
But it's also, I know a guy who's in his 60s that loved Spider-Man comics when he was a kid. And this Spider-Man he loves.
Mm-hmm.
And that's really like all you need to know. Do kids like it and do old comic book farts like it?
Yeah, that's your main demographic.
I mean, that's who you know if you won, right? Who cares about people? I hope they're not making them for me. God, don't. No, people are. Man, forget it. We don't know what we want. We just want, like, you know, we just want to collect action figures and keep them in a box. Keep them in, don't open toys and shit. That's what we want to do. Just don't buy things and don't open it. Don't touch it.
Yeah, it is fun to see a PG-13 film that's geared and actually has a story that will probably resonate with that PG-13 demographic, which this does. Tom Holland does great in it. You got enough fun superhero stuff in here. You know, what'd you think of the Mysterio character and the villain that they had in here? I mean, as we already mentioned, the superhero element almost seems to take a kind of side path to the main awkward teenager storyline in here. But what'd you think of the Mysterio character and their setup with him and all the people who have been scorned by Tony Stark?
I like that. You know, it was, you know, Marvel, compared to DC, the villains I always felt are kind of weak in their movies. You know, like you always forget, like, oh, who was the villain? That it don't really matter. They're so much focused on the heroes and their smart aleck thing with each other. Where that's always, I felt like DC had the leg up. Their villain was always cooler, and more memorable too. But like Mysterio was one of the first, other than Hela, villains that I'm like, oh, right. Like you really, he was a good character. I thought Vulture was a great character too, but they had Michael Keaton playing him. Here we got Gyllenhaal, who, God, I hate to sound shitty, but he's a good actor, but he's got the mouth of a puppet. He just has a mouth that looks like someone's, it's all straight, like someone's hand is behind there working it. It just, I don't know what it is with his mouth, but God, it's, I hope I don't sound like an asshole for saying that, but he's a great actor and a perfect person to have in this role. Because he seemed really smooth, like a hero. He almost kind of had a Tony Starkish thing about him, and you really do trust him the way that, you know, because they set him up as a hero.
Yeah.
And I know you're going like, oh, but is he though? Because it wrapped up too easy and all of this stuff, and you know, he kind of has a, not a superhero who wears that giant helmet. But the fun part is like seeing how he's pulling it off, because you have a feeling something's gonna, because there's like a premature resolution to their whole situation,
right.
And you're like, oh shit, this movie's only been an hour or something. Marvel's not gonna let me go for, you know, at least another 2-3 hours. So like, I thought that really worked for me, having it be all disgruntled workers from Tony Stark. I believed them, you know,
yeah.
What I'm saying, like I bought that whole thing. Them, how they pulled off their illusion, they got a little explaining. I didn't really care about like that much. I was like, oh no, we have these drones and we're exploding, and here's a whole scene that shows how we did. Come on, maybe it's Scooby-Doo didn't give a shit about all this explanation. But like, as far as the villains go, to me is one of the stronger.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's 2 for 2 Spider-Man movies having good villains, I think.
Yeah, I think so too. I like the Mysterio villain. It was kind of different. He had an interesting motivation in that, you know, I mean, yeah, he was presenting a false good image, his false superhero image, but there's part of him that wanted to be a hero, but he couldn't. And so he made himself a hero. Granted, there's collateral damage, but, you know, he was right. And it was interesting that it kind of surprised me that this was one of the first, I would say, MCU, well, not first, But this is one of those MCU films where it really was a little bit more upfront, I thought, with its social commentary.
Than
some of the previous. I mean, I'm not saying it wasn't in the previous films, and we got it. You know, I mean, you know, you get it in Black Panther, Captain Marvel, all a number of those. You got social commentary, but this one was really upfront because here you have a guy telling you. I mean, let's draw the parallels here, talking about how we have a society who is believing that he's a fake superhero.
He says at one point people will believe anything. I mean, we know that's true, you know, but they also will believe whatever they want to. You know, so it's everything. That is not very subtle about what he's talking about. But still, you know, the movies like Marvel and companies like Disney, they got the ear of a lot of people. Mm-hmm. So for them to step into and say something like that, I mean, even as subtle as it can be, sometimes it's a good move to make.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree. And anything about perception of people and heroes and public figures is actually in the forefront of the demographic they're actually targeting and have made this film for with Spider-Man. Yeah. Because I can tell you right now, the teenage folks that hang around with my friend, my kids, who are both, you know, older teenagers, they talk about stuff I never talked about when I was a teenager, but they're very aware of current events, of, you know, media and biasness and perception and all this. And it is in their normal conversations. So to see it presented in a film that is geared towards that age, I thought was really was great. They're making this film for the younger audience. It kind of goes along with, and I know there's some people out there that were very adamant against the new Child's Play, but the new Child's Play is not for you or me or the 40-something horror fan. It is for the age that we were when we got into horror films. It is the horror version for the younger teen, the older teen demographic, the younger.
You got a lot of people who, let's face it, are like deeply racist, deeply misogynist, and it's all linked to that. They see certain things as theirs. They see like the Little Mermaid as theirs. They see Star Wars as theirs. They see Child's Play as theirs. So anything that's not being catered to them, they feel as though has been taken away from them somehow, and they've somehow lost something, and they're angry about it. But when you want to talk about superhero heroes and villains, good guys, bad guys, the thing that trips me out the most, and this relates to what we're talking about Spider-Man here, is that you got heroes, superheroes and villains as like the main type of fantasy entertainment in the culture.
Right.
Meanwhile, I cannot remember a time where people were happier to be villains and to support villainy and to take down any type of hero. It's just like the craziest juxtaposition I've ever seen, because you would think people would be wanting to be more like somebody like Captain America or Black Panther. But you see so many people are so much they see villainy as being like a cooler thing. And so it becomes even more relevant when you have spent a lot of time like they do with Mysterio on establishing his motives and showing you why he thinks the way he does. It's funny to me, man. You'd sit there and motherfuckers would go like, yeah, you know what? I would be that guy. I'd vote for him. He's right. I hope he kills Spider-Man and all his brown friends.
Yeah, he really, the Mysterio character has some interesting motivations, and you can see how he was able to groom the disgruntled employees of Tony Stark to follow his way of thinking. And not only that, but go along with the collateral damage and go against saying, you know, well, maybe we shouldn't. And then he puts an argument like, oh, okay, yeah, sure. You know what? You're right. You're absolutely right. There's collateral damage anyway when the big good guys are fighting, so why not have it with us? Because in the end, we're going to be the good guys. I mean, that's the argument he puts up. I mean, you've got that scene where, you know, you got the tech geek guy controlling the drones, and then he starts to question, yeah, you know what? you know, it reminded me a bit of Batman Returns, mm-hmm. where Penguin is talking about taking the firstborn child of all the rich people in Gotham and killing them. And you got the one clown guy who goes, Penguin, killing kids, you know, isn't that a little? And he gets shot. And Penguin goes, no, it's a lot. You know, it's
yeah, like, but now they're actually for real doing it, you know, yeah. So in real yeah. life.
You know, and so it's similar in that respect where you get the one techie guy questioning our crazy leader. And then he turns all the drones on him and he's like, no, you know what? I'm good. Yeah. Instead of bailing or figuring out a way out later on, like he could have just left at one point. No, he yeah. stays and he still helps the crazy guy. He eventually goes all in, just like the rest of these people who think it's going to be okay to destroy a bridge with people on it and kids in a bus.
Yeah. Man, you convince yourself of all type of bullshit when you're out for your own ends, you know?
And that's where I think they're going with the next storyline. I haven't read too much up on it, but I really think they're going along with the whole perception of superheroes and who is actually who they say they are and who's got a false face. You know, the whole Secret Invasion type storyline or Secret Wars like they had in the comics. I think they're going that route with it because the setup in here, the whole theme about Spider-Man in Spider-Man Far From Home, to me, the kind of core was what is truth and, you know, being true to who you really are versus, you know, putting up a front and, you know, what is real and what is fake basically is yeah. what plays at the core of this story, I think, because you've got Spider-Man throughout this whole thing, Peter Parker, who is wanting to be the kid and kind of denying the fact that he's got this role of superhero. You know, he doesn't necessarily want to grow up, but
but look what big fuck ups the grown ups are, man. You got like Martin Starr and JB Smoove in there, you know. They're not saving you. No. I mean they might he's all like, okay, even Happy. He's like, everybody to the jet. Bam. Okay, no.
And he doesn't, I mean, granted, we find out later on that Nick Fury is one of the aliens who can shapeshift, but for most of it, Nick Fury is acting like Nick Fury, and he's not really giving Spider-Man that much help. I mean, yeah, they gave him a suit and that, but he's not exactly holding his hand either.
Nah, and plus, you know, it was a giveaway, that fake-ass beard they had on Nick Fury. Was not a good looking beard.
Sam Jackson, the real Nick Fury would never have that beard.
No, he wouldn't. He'd be like, you know, and it's blowing in the wind, part of it's coming off and shit. Like, that's nobody's beard does this.
Yeah, that's true. I did get I got a kick out of their two chaperones too, though, for the group, the bumbling teenagers the bumbling teachers, chaperones who felt ripped directly out of one of those late 80s teen comedies, didn't they?
They did.
I wonder if that was some of their motivation, because they did, the two of them were just playing. I'm like, oh, wow. I'm like, I've watched many a teenage movie with these two types of teachers that are just totally oblivious to everything.
Yeah, I mean, the thing is, man, could you take out the superhero stuff and still have a good comedy, a good fun movie? I think so. I think you mm-hmm. really could.
Yeah, with just a little tweaking, you could just have your coming of age type of self-discovery, you know, your discovery of self type of teenage story Jesus, listen to me sound like I know what I'm talking about. But, you know, that type of story where the teenager kind of discovers who he truly is because he's coming to the end of his school career and going into the adult world. And that's what you kind of have here with a little tweaking. Yeah, you wouldn't necessarily need all the big CGI monster.
No, and you could just put like a radioactive spider in the pie and it'll fuck it.
Arachnid pie. Yeah.
That, you know what's a good, while I'm thinking about, remember last National Lampoon Senior Trip?
Yeah, yeah.
That was good, right? I need to rewatch that. That was a good movie.
Yeah, okay. I mean, but this is done in that style, definitely. And I liked the lightheartedness. I was kind of worried when they were playing off of, you know, how the impact of Tony's death was for Spider-Man, because they were so close. He was that father figure that he didn't quite have, you know, in his life. But I was kind of worried they were going to get a little too heavy, but they don't really get, even with such a big event, they don't get that heavy with the pining for Iron Man sort of story, do they, in here at all, or subplot? Do they?
No, it's not. But I'm glad they did that, because when you're that age, that kind of death does not hit you the same way that it does when you get older. Like, you, I think they were very true to, you know, how death, you know, how we experience that and how we grieve when we're that young. It just, the weight of it doesn't ever really, I don't feel, at least for me, it didn't, the weight of it doesn't hit you fully. You are sad and it's upsetting, but you don't know how, you know, it doesn't have like, you know, adult movie hurt kind of thing.
Well, because you're, and especially if you're a kid with superpowers like Spider-Man, mortality still is far away as far as your actual understanding of it.
Yeah, true.
I mean, even though he's seen a lot of it, don't get me wrong, Peter Parker has seen a lot of it over the past MCU films, still, he is at that age where, you're like you said, he's sad, he understands, he's sad, he feels lost, he feels that emptiness, but it is not dominating him like an older person might. For him, it doesn't dwell there. It's there occasionally and it pops up, but otherwise he goes about being a teenager doing teenage things, like, you know, competing with a fellow competitor for the heart of MJ, which I loved. I thought it was interesting because Peter Parker, he gets these glasses, which basically gives him the entire control of all Stark technology, which eventually comes around and bites him in the ass because the bad guys get their hands on it. But you get that initial thing where he gets that photo. Again, we're talking current teenage situations. He gets a picture taken of him that he doesn't want MJ to see.
It was great. It was so, you know, that's such a like a high school kind of situation, a real life situation. Again, take the superhero stuff out of it. It was almost not even there, you know.
Mm-hmm.
How great that was.
Yeah, it was almost like a side thought in many aspects, because you get this whole sequence to where now we're not dealing with Peter Parker fighting some big monster or fighting side by side with this new hero Mysterio. No, we've got Peter Parker with a dilemma of trying to get rid of a picture that was taken to Adam of him by his rival for MJ, and trying to avoid it from being seen by MJ, which almost ends in a drone destroying their bus.
It was good because, you know, you're going to make those mistakes, man. Mm-hmm. And you're going to, you know, trust people that you shouldn't trust. I mean, all of it is part of being young, man. Mm-hmm. Not that it don't stop when you're older, but the consequences are a little different. But, you know, I just thought very well written in terms of how they do that. My big problem when I'm watching the Marvel movies and why I'm not really even interested in seeing all of them, because you look at it and you kind of like, oh, I don't, I've seen that before, you know, or what are you going to give me besides here's this thing that's going to destroy the world and here's all the people that need to make jokes while they fight it? Like,
right.
Get what's what are you going to give me that's more than that? I mean, how many times could we watch that? And, you know, what I thought was a trip is why he was all naming the superheroes that could do it instead of him.
Oh, yeah.
And he says Captain Marvel. And the look that he gives him, because I think everybody knows, should Captain Marvel ever show up in any of these, the movie can be over in like 5 minutes, yeah, if not 3 minutes.
Yeah, I mean, she's the Superman of the MCU, basically. I mean,
oh, yeah. Yeah,
she shows up, that's it. I mean, 9 times out of 10, boom, bad guy dead, you know, or defeated. You know, just like when Superman, it's always been a problem that I've had with, like the Superman character. Don't get me wrong, I that's why I'm Batman true and true, but the problem I have with the Superman character is the tough part is you make such an powerful or omnipotent type of superhero. It's like, well, what do you come up with that really rivals that? You know, because you know he could really just kick someone's ass, you know, through the whole thing.
No, they do good with going like, she can't be in every single movie. Mm-hmm. She can't like be there for every single thing that's going on. Get this idea, at least what they did in Endgame, I thought was a good way out. Although it would have been cooler if she showed up earlier, make that movie shorter. It was like, dude, the whole universe. She's the most powerful. There's other places that's more important than this Mickey Mouse shit, you know?
Yeah. Oh, I loved that they play that angle, because so many times in the superhero films, Earth becomes the center of everything. All the time, you know, and that's the kind of fault of sci-fi in general. And granted, yeah, I understand what they're going for, so your audience can relate, but Earth becomes pretty much the center all the time of the most activity. It becomes the headquarters of the United Planets or, you know, whatnot. And so here you have a character like Captain Marvel, who's just going, I got like a billion other planets out there that got shit happening. I love you guys and all, but yeah, you know.
Yeah, could y'all take care of the rejects from Scooby-Doo, the Mama Cass episode right now, the lava monster from Moana? I just don't see that as a threat. Could you?
But, I mean, I like that justification. And in here, I actually like the justification, too, of how Spider-Man isn't just immediately, voluntarily hopping in the old outfit to save people. I mean, he actually reluctantly kind of like, you know, until his friends start showing that they're getting threatened, he's like, oh, crap. But even, you know, he's like, I don't really want to put on the suit.
He leaves it at home.
Yeah. Yeah, he actually is a hero that left his suit at home.
Yeah, on purpose.
And, you know, I loved what they did with this character. And this film was lighter. I liked the approach they took with it. I just like with Homecoming. Yeah, I think this is one of those films where they actually are writing and targeting the PG-13 rating that the film has, dealing with subject matters that will actually relate to that demographic.
Yeah, I can't wait until we see some actual PG, more like Spider-Verse PG of these things, you know. Because I really think the young kids really want to see some of this stuff, but it's far too violent. But yet they'll sell them the toys in a minute, you know, or a Happy Meal in a minute.
Well violent or even deep exploration. I mean, look at what happened with Iron Man 3, dealing with the subject of PTSD with Iron Man.
That's not a kid's Iron Man story.
I'm sorry, but, and don't get me wrong, I am not downplaying the intelligence of a teenager, but
How about somebody who's like 7 that wants to see it?
Right, or even within that 7 to 12 demographic, they're not going to get why Tony Stark is freaking out and getting the sweats. Even if you try to explain it, that it's not going to click with them, but here in Spider-Man Far From Home, you have many situations that is going to click, I think, with your audience, you know, your younger crowd, because that's the stuff they're dealing with right now, you know. And I like the resolution that it came to as far as you know, how Spider-Man eventually suits up. He uses the Stark technology to make a really cool new suit, and we get our super CGI final battle with him and Mysterio. And then we get a segment which, one, I'm glad to see J.K. Simmons still coming back as Jonah Jameson, because I love him in that role. Though, did it surprise you that they played the Daily Bugle as a controversial vlog more so than a newspaper? What do you think about that change?
Was this in the end credits?
Yeah, this was after.
You have to tell me what happened. I don't ever stay for through the.
Oh,
credits.
I'm sorry. Yeah, no.
I went home and was going to read about it online, but I forgot to.
Yeah, no. At the end credits, Spider-Man, this was at the very end, actually, I think. He does the swooping of the thing and he puts, you know, MJ down, and she walks off and whatnot. And then, I think it might have been the end credits. Anyway, he rescues something. Anyway, there's a video that plays on the side of one of the buildings, you know, one of the big building billboards. And they have a new breaking news where there's a video clip that makes it look like Spider-Man killed a bunch of civilians, ordered the drone strike to kill a bunch of civilians as well as Mysterio. And it's from one of Mysterio's lackeys releases this video that looks like that is doctored and edited, and it was released by the dailybugle.net, as they put it, the controversial website.
Ooh, a deep fake.
Yes, a fake news dig. And they play at it, and so now the world is suspecting Spider-Man may, you know, it makes Spider-Man look bad. And you have a bunch of people starting to just believe it because it's on the news. And I'm like, wow, way to be on your nose with your social commentary there.
Yeah, no, that's cool, because, you know, there's that part where he finally gets Mysterio by pulling a Neo and just like using his spider sense.
Yeah.
To fight. And it's nothing but an old, you know, blind swordsman type thing or whatever. Jet Li bottle cap. it's what it's saying is like, think for yourself.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and that's, I mean, but it could also be twisted by somebody who is just like, oh, you know, don't believe anything that's the truth.
Right.
But yeah. It's all, you know, like you said, the whole theme about it is, you know, what's true and what isn't. But that goes along with, that's interesting. So there was like that in the middle of the credits or the end, or there was just
it was just near the end. It was okay. In the end, I think it was the first end credit sequence that was there. He rescued someone or something. I forgot exactly how it happened. But yeah, there that happens with that. And everybody was, you know, some of the audience was cheering because J.K. Simmons was J. Jonah Jameson again. And
right.
So, you know, you get that going on. And then at the very end credits, we find out that Nick Fury's been on a spaceship the whole time, and the aliens who shapeshift were actually the ones who were posing as Hill, Agent Maria Hill, and Nick Fury the whole time, and Nick was on a spaceship.
I knew about that beard. I knew it.
Yep. So there was that part. Yeah, which was like, I'm like, okay, but I understand why they put it in there, because it's showing the portrayal and how these shapeshifters can pose as other people. Because I really feel this is also meant to be a setup for the next phases of the MCU, and I really think they're leaning towards the Secret Wars with you not trusting who is actually who and all of that. And it really feels that way just with the setup of this film, you know, of what it does. But it wasn't that heavy handed in like Age of Ultron, which was just a complete setup film. This at least didn't feel like it, but you can see where they're going to go.
I eventually saw that Ultron right before Endgame, and it didn't, I thought it was like one of the worst to me.
I don't really care for it at all, because it pretty much took something that could have been really interesting and they whittled it down to a setup for the next phase of those of the MCU films, pretty much. I mean, with that film. So, but here, Spider-Man Far From Home, I liked it. It was a nice little refreshing, lighter touch to a break from all the other heavier MCU films. This kind of had more of the tone of like Aquaman or Shazam, didn't it?
Yeah, it was just, like I said, man, it was a little bit lighter movie, which is great because they really do need to think about, like, when you have a movie about a young character, you don't really think about, like, writing it more toward young people. And so, you know, just it can't hurt. You know, no. Give it a
shot. It's not going to hurt that you write something lighter. It's okay. You know, it's okay to write a lighter fare. It's okay to write a comic book movie for a young audience. You know, and I think they forget that. And I think you have I'm not going to get on my fan base soapbox. I'm not going to get triggered. I'm just going to say that I think the writers forget that they almost try to write to appeal sometimes to it feels like to the older audience, when that's not who you really need to pull in. You need to write something that's going to be relevant, I think, more towards your younger audience. And the Spider-Man films, both of them, have been that. More so than majority of the other MCU films, I would say.
Oh, yeah, man. Well, you know, I'm like that about Pixar, you know, stuff. I'm really critical about who's, you know, who are they really writing the movies for, or what, I should say, an award, not even a human being. But no, so I get it, man. And I, you know, I often see, like, you'll be critical of like, how rabid the fan base is of the Marvel Cinematic Universe movies, how they jump all over every kind of thing, and but specifically how they've made it like they always make a DC versus Marvel kind of thing. Did they do that with the comics? Was it like the fierce loyalty rivalry, or is it purely just?
No, it's movie. I've had this discussion with our buddy Doc, as well as Derek too, and a few other people who are heavy into comic books. And you do not, I have not ever walked into a comic book store and seen like one group completely huddled by the DC comics and one group completely huddled by the Marvel comics, and them looking at each other with the side eye. And no, this rivalry, this division really feels, from everything I've witnessed, is just from the movie fandom audience. Yeah. It really feels that way.
Is it because like the Marvel ones have been like the big, the more like successful ones, or the more consistent ones? Or like, what's the deal? Like, what's the, because it used to be Batman was like the, everybody's like number one, you know what I'm saying? Like before all this, he was like the big comic book movie, like the most successful one, right? Him and Superman.
Yeah. Him and, well, you didn't really get much else, but yeah, him, Batman and Superman were the two that pretty much all you got that were the most successful, especially, you know, the Batman films, after they went away from the Joel Schumacher ones and, you know, what's his name? Oh, flew away right now. The director,
Nolan.
Thank you. Christopher Nolan picked them up. You know, I mean, that's pretty much what you had for superhero films that were big, super successful superhero films. So when the Marvel started doing it, you know, Marvel fans were happy. But, you know, I only see this division in discussions when it comes to people, MCU, DCEU, film fan bases, because I go into a comic shop and you will not be able to tell in most comic shops, I don't think, who is a DC fan and who is a Marvel fan, because when they walk into the store, they're browsing the whole shelf.
Right.
They're picking up this one from DC. They're picking up this one from Marvel. They're picking up this one from an independent comic book company, you know? They're just
so which side does it come from more online than for the fandom? And I'm sorry if you've covered this on your show a million times.
No.
I feel like I haven't asked you about it. Who's like, you know, who's busted on who worse?
I am no means an expert, but just from observations I have seen, both sides can get pretty vitriol. But I will say the MCU ones put up a little bit more of a, I will say at times, louder voice because against the DC films, because, and it is true that of these later films, the Marvels have been more successful. So they have that behind them. You know, they actually have some of that behind them. Never mind that the DC films, with their flaws, may be just as good. They aren't as quite successful. So you have that. So it always feels a little bit more like the Marvel ones are quick to jump and are the ones that are the more vocal. But I will not, I'm not saying the DC fans by far are innocent at all either. Both sides, it's like, they slam each other, and I'm just sitting here going, when I bring it up, people look at me, go, oh, you're defending DC. I'm like, I'm not saying the DC films are perfect by any means. They have many other flaws. I'm just saying that Marvel films also have similar flaws, but it seems like many are willing to overlook it with Marvel and not with DC.
Yeah. So are you like, you know, do you feel like you're more of a DC fan because you like Batman the most?
I just want to good movie, but I mean, I like Batman, but it's funny. I've loved Batman. I've loved Batman forever, especially after the Burton film came out. But even before that, I've just loved the Batman character.
Well,
the,
me and you both like Batman versus Superman.
Yes, we did. We're like the only two in the universe. So, but I've liked Batman, but I will honestly say when I think of Batman, I don't think DC. Mm-hmm. I just think Batman.
The character, yeah.
Or even any of these characters, any characters on either side. When we're watching Spider-Man, it doesn't enter into my brain while I'm watching the film or reading the comic, oh, I'm watching a Marvel film. Oh, this is a Marvel brand film. No, I'm watching Spider-Man. I am watching X-Men. I am watching Superman. I am watching Captain, you know, the character. I don't associate the brand really with it at all. You know, I take the movie and the character. That's who I like. I don't care which banner it flies under, you know. And I think a lot of comic book reading fans are like that, to where they just want a good story. They just want good characters. They want something that's going to make them feel like, now that it costs that much, $4 or $5 invested in this comic book, they're going to get some cool art and a interesting story that will keep them wanting to get more issues.
Yeah, I thought about this stuff, and I thought about you actually, just some of the conversations we have about fandom and all that shit. When I was watching today, I saw this movie, great movie called The Last Black Man in San Francisco.
Oh yeah, I saw a trailer for that.
Dude, it's so, it's like, to me, like the first like best picture contender I've seen this year. Mm-hmm. It is such a good movie, but there's a part where Jimmy, who is the guy who is third generation San Francisco resident, and of course he's dealing with gentrification and all this other stuff, he is on the bus and there's these two white girls, like, you know, they're in their 20s or whatever, talking about the startup that they moved there for, and one of them's like, you know, their dog in San Francisco, I'm talking about how much, you know, one of them's like, I hate San Francisco, and he says, excuse me, like this, and they're like, what? He goes, you're not allowed to hate San Francisco. And they're like, what? And he goes, do you love it? And she's like, I mean, it's fine. But he's like, you have to love it to hate it. And I'm like, holy shit. This applies to so much of what, you know, don't you think? Yes or no? I mean, in order, like you're saying, you know, like the, you have to, in order to really be able to justifiably be super critical of it to the degree that a lot of those people are, you have to genuinely, I feel, and I know it's funny to associate these things, but I heard him say that and I was like, oh shit. Do you, I mean, does that make any sense? Do you sometimes feel that way, or does it, you know, do you think he's right? Do you have to love it to hate it?
I think in some,
to have permission to hate it, to be allowed to hate it, you have to really love it.
I think in some respects, yeah. I mean, you know, I'm not saying that people have to love DCU to hate it, but no, I get that because when you love something, you know everything about it, especially with fandom, And so then when you got something coming along that you don't like, that is part of that, you can hate it. You know, I mean, I can understand where that's coming from. I don't exactly agree with hating on anything in all particular, though I have caught myself hating on some films, don't get me wrong.
Well, but he can't mean an all-encompassing hate.
No.
Because you know, the love is the root of it. You know,
right.
I think when you say, you know, that I'm aware of the flaws and things mm-hmm. like that, I think that could fall under that umbrella.
Right. You know? Yeah. I mean, I love Batman. I don't love all the Batman films. I dislike some of them.
Sure.
But the overall arc stuff, Batman as the category, I love. Particular things I hate. But that's just like films. I love films in general, even the really bad ones that put me to sleep. Now, they put me to sleep. I don't like them, but I love the genre, the idea, the whole entertainment aspect of film. And so maybe, yeah, in that respect, sure, you get comic book movies or whatnot where people love comics, but they hate specific ones. And taken in that context, I guess I can see it, you know, and I understand it. It's when it gets personal and they go at each other, the fan base especially, go at one another to where I'm just like, ah, you know.
Well, at that point, man, they don't. It's not movies that they hate, it's themselves. Because if you really loved yourself, you would not act like that.
No. But so far, bringing it back around to Spider-Man Far From Home, I've seen a lot of positive for the most part. I've seen some people say they were bored by it. They didn't care for it because I think they're still coming down from the Avengers Endgame seriousness. So to go from that to this, especially if you like, you know, watch them back to back. Yeah,
this is way better. This is a way better movie. Oh God,
it is a lighter fare. It is what you need after what they did with Endgame, especially. And yeah, I want to see more Spider-Man films. I like the lighter tone. It's not necessarily deep, but they do cover some topics and address some things, but they never go too heavy with things, which I think those final Marvel films especially, and I understand that's what everything was leading up to, but still get a little bit too heavy for my superhero film. You know what I mean? And so, yeah, I dug it, and I'm interested to see where they go to next. I forgot what next MCU film is coming out, but there's so many that when we were talking earlier about Midsummer, I'm glad we do get movies like that in between.
Yeah, I would like it if there's some that you don't have to have seen all the other ones to see. You know what I mean? Or want the more, I still want there to be some that will stand on their own, you know,
and
I always seem to like those ones the most.
And I have too, you know, I have quite a bit. Some of my favorite MCU films are ones that barely touch into the Infinity Saga, you know,
yeah.
Some of those are some of my favorite ones, you know, the Doctor Strange, the Ant-Man, you know, those type of films, I really dug more than the main Avenger type storylines. And same thing here with the Spider-Man. Yeah, it still has a lot of the influences from the previous movies, but still it feels kind of like on its own, like the original Iron Man did, you know, that started it all because it was the first one. So when you watched it, you didn't have all these extra references or stuff worked into it. So it kind of felt like that. So yeah, just to close it out, a good friend of mine, his mom watched Endgame, and she honestly came out and said, you know what? I feel bad, but I felt a little bit lost watching this film and watching, you know, Infinity War and Endgame, because she didn't remember all the other films.
It's not a movie. It's an episode of a TV show. That's how I feel about it.
They're the old school serials, but instead of being 15 minutes long, they're 2.5-3 hours long.
Just, you know, It really makes it hard to get motivated to go out and see when you know it's not even going to give you a straight beginning, middle, and end. After 3 hours, you still, there's going to be more.
Dude, when you went to Child's Play, that film was like 90 or 100 minutes long. Did that feel refreshing to come out of a film and like, holy crap, it was only, you know, 90 minutes long. Wow, I still got plenty of my night left.
Yeah, no, it's, you know, tell your story how long it takes to tell your story. Yeah, but, you know, I just, some movies, 2 hours or 2.5 hour go by like nothing. Like that movie Roma on Netflix, I seen that like 4 times. That movie goes by like, but man, other stuff, I'm like, how many endings do we need to see? It's like Return of the King and shit.
Oh my God, Return of the King. Yes, the prime example of that. Just everybody's starting to get up to leave and they're, oh wait, no, we can't. Oh wait.
There was endings for people that got up to pee and came back. They're like, oh, we realized you had to piss, so you went up and missed the first two endings. So here's two more.
Here's two more for you. That's why I didn't go to see the extended extra deleted scenes of Endgame when they re-released it recently. With extra 6 minutes of footage, because one, I don't believe in that, but two, I don't need to sit through 3 hours just to get the 6 extra minutes.
I mean, if you wanted to see it again, fine, or if you left halfway through or fell asleep, you know, or whatever. Yeah. But you know, God help you if you saw that Spider-Man trailer and hadn't watched Endgame yet.
Yeah, I feel bad. I feel bad for the people who didn't see that ahead of time. Yeah, because when I saw the trailer too, I was like, really? You guys?
It was so soon. It was like a few weeks later. I'm like, shit.
I understand you already made your $1 billion or $2 billion, but give people a little breathing room, will you?
They could have like not even shown it. You know, I just like, oh, okay.
Well, that's the thing. They didn't need to put that in there. They could have left that as, you know, later on when you go to the movie, you go, oh, we're addressing this as well. Cool. Rather than showing it in the trailer, because by now, especially with these MCU films, as I've said before, you have these people's money with the MCU films. I mean, it's not like you're not going to make bank. So you could just put a title screen and says, give us your money and people will do it. You know, you don't necessarily need to see a trailer for it.
All right. So Spider-Man, you would like to see another one.
I would.
Right. What is one that you would like, don't like, you would be fine if they never did another one?
I would be fine if they didn't do, well, of course it's all closed up now, but you know, the main Avengers outside of Hawkeye and Black Widow, mm-hmm. And maybe Hulk, I don't need to see those characters anymore, ever. No offense.
All right, so you don't want to see, like, you don't want to see if they make the Black Widow's movie, you don't want to see that.
No, I do. I said outside of Black Widow and Hawkeye, okay. And Hulk never, I mean, okay. He got Incredible Hulk, but he never really got his own solo movie. You know, if they made those, I want to see those. The Black Widow one, you know, I would like to see. Hawkeye especially, I would like to see. I like that Thor, they ended it at the end of Endgame with Thor being with Guardians of the Galaxy. That mm-hmm. way, I don't mind seeing the character. I don't need to see another solo film with Thor, as entertaining as Ragnarok was. I don't need that. You know, I want them to start digging. Now that they've got this rabid fan base, this devout fan base, I want to mm-hmm. see them dig into the obscure stuff that you barely heard of, you know, okay. Or bring back Blade, which is apparently talk of what they might be doing.
That was my next question. What are Marvel movies from like New Line or from Fox or whoever, things that now they got like every character or whatever, who is some ones you would like to have like not appear in another Spider-Man movie, but who would you like to see them do, like, you know, come out with a new movie of?
Well, I'm excited to see some of the talk that they're talking about, but I would love to see a new Blade film.
Yeah.
I would like to see them try again with Fantastic Four, because I think there's potential there for a lot of fun. I think, you know, I don't think all the Fantastic iterations they've come out with have been horrible. The last one wasn't really great at all, but they tried to be a little more serious, it felt, in many ways. You know, it'll be interesting to see where they take X-Men, because that franchise kind of fell apart when they tried to reboot it with the First Class in that. And it started off strong, but Dark Phoenix, by the end of it, you're just like, you know, so I'd like to see them maybe revisit that and see some other X-Men besides the ones everybody knows. You know, I'm not too familiar with a lot of the other characters that they have, but I mean, they did a TV series, but it'd be cool to see a movie version of Cloak and Dagger. You know, I got very excited when they were going to do the I think it was Inhumans or whatnot, the horror one, I forgot which one it was. There, a trailer came out for the film, and then they stopped it after Disney got it, and they reworked it, not Inhumans.
New Mutants,
right? Yeah.
Yeah.
You know, I was excited for that. When I saw that trailer, man, I'm like, yes, all right, let's do this. And then it went away.
Yeah, that trailer played in theaters.
Yeah, that's where I saw it, because I didn't even know about it until I saw it. I even saw a poster for it, and I'm like, dude. And then they pulled it, and I'm like, oh, man. I'm like... You know, that's why I enjoyed Brightburn so much. I'm like, yes, I'm like, we have this culture of superhero fandom now to where we can do some fun things with it, I think. Explore odd and unusual ones. I'd love to see another Constantine movie, you know?
Yeah, I like Constantine.
Constantine, I think, would be really interesting, getting to some of the occult stuff, you know? And again, I'm not that familiar with a lot of the Marvel characters, but just that, it'd be interesting to see people do different takes or come up with something new, like they did with Brightburn, you know, come up with a different character. You could get away with it now, I think.
Yeah, 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 you know, I agree.
You could take that chance. So what about you? Anything in particular you'd like to see them...
I'm super curious about, it's a movie, but I haven't seen it. Batman versus Ninja Turtles.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
Is that good? Did you see that?
I have not seen it yet. It's based off of a comic, limited series of comics they did, but apparently it's supposed to be decent. I heard it was a decent film, but yeah, that'd be awesome to see a live action version of.
Oh, yeah, they could do it. For me, man, I'm down for all the women fronted ones. I'm down for all the Black Panther ones. Mm-hmm. This Far From Home could be the last white Spider-Man we ever see on screen. That would be fine with me. I would like, you know, I'm interested in more Spider-Verse, all of that stuff. That's what's going to keep me going. I feel like. What they had done with Captain America, with Iron Man, with all the, you know, mostly mm-hmm. white characters or whatever, mostly male characters, let that be over, you know?
You can dig into the more diverse superheroes, I think.
Well, I mean, look at who's in the ticket line to see these things.
Mm-hmm.
You know, wake up, man.
Yeah, look, like, at...
Isn't 25 of them enough, or however many it was?
Yeah, 20, 22, I think. Yeah. Or at least. Yeah, dig into some other ones. It'd be cool to see them explore those even further. So,
yeah, or if we're going to be seeing these until, you know, the rest of our lifetimes, let the next 10 years try that. You know?
Again, you have now established a fan base of superhero films in general to where you will get people to go see it. I mean, yeah. As much as people ragged on and cut down Venom still made money.
Venom, I don't know where you are about Venom. That's a good-ass movie. Like, I didn't see it in theater, and when I saw it at home, I wished I had seen it. It was great.
It was a fun movie.
It was great.
I had fun with that movie. Made me wanted to see the bloodier cut of the film, you know, but I had fun with it. You know, it was a nice little break from it, and that still made bank. Maybe not as much as the rest, but it still made bank. Yeah. Because
So are they going to bring Peter Parker from this movie to Venom? Like, is he going to be?
People are wondering if they're going to do a crossover, since it is all basically in. Though they say Venom isn't in the MCU, there's some people going, yeah, you're eventually going to possibly. That's just like, you know, them saying Deadpool isn't in the MCU, but people now want to see, now that Disney owns everything, many people want to see the Deadpool Spider-Man pair up. Like they do in the comics.
What are you going to do with it?
Yeah.
What are you going to do with it if you got them all? God, that'd be. Okay, I'd see another Spider-Man, White Spider-Man, if it was that Venom with this kid.
Oh,
I would
yeah.
see that. I'd see that.
That would be definitely interesting. And okay,
reverse my position.
Yeah,
reverse.
Well, I think we'll wrap it up for the night, sir. This has been always a very mentally stimulating and interesting conversation, sir. And now, tonight, this is where we give you the license to shill. So please, go ahead, sir. Where can they find you at and your stuff?
Hey, I do not have any superhero movies, but I would love to make one. I have one. It's on Mondo Gonzo, which is a Blu-ray you can buy at gonzorific.com. And it's a movie called Hero Cookie. And it's about two women that decide to make themselves into superheroes with like duct tape and putting their underwear on the outside of their clothes and all this stuff. And it's a very irresponsible, reckless, trauma influenced. I take no responsibility now for what I put in that movie. The opening scene, someone masturbates with a Lion-O action figure. So enter at your own risk. But we got movies on Amazon Prime also. Just look under Gonzorific or search my name, Andrew Shearer. Every minute that you spend, every hour, every dollar, all of it goes back into helping us make movies here in Athens, and we would very much appreciate it.
Thunder, thunder, Thundercats! Ho! Oh! No, just kidding.
Yeah. No, it's that we dubbed that in. Like, I don't know how we got away with that. It's on that disc. I'm not even kidding you.
Oh, that's a thing of beauty. That's art right there, folks.
Yeah. Actually, now that I think of it, yes, yeah, someone masturbates with a Spider-Man bubble bath. The little head, she turns it upside down. That does happen. A different character. A lot of jacking off, as it turns out.
A lot of
comic book fans don't even know what that is.
No, they've never ever. Folks, tune in if you get a chance. By the time you hear this, it will not have broadcast yet. July 12th and 13th, there is the Creepy Channel Crawl, which Andrew and I are going to be the part of. Actually, we are the closers. We are the last in the 28-hour marathon of streaming shows that will be going on, where you have horror-themed and horror-enjoying channels talking horror subjects, and you can check it out at horroraddicts.com. They've got a link there for the playlist of all the stream episodes, including ours, where we're going to be talking about sci-fi horror. So it'll be interesting. First time we've ever done something like that, where it's going to be kind of interactive with chat and such. So yeah, you'll want to check that out, folks, at horroraddicts.com. I'll put a link down in the body of this episode. So thank you, Andrew. As always, it's been a pleasure. Always fun to talk about films with you. And now we'll just say good night, everyone.
You'll find the Spider-Mion. Remember that?
Yep.
That Ramones cover where he's like, Spider-Mion.
Spider-Man.
Like, why are you country? Yeah, it's like, how are you country all of a sudden? You're from New York. Spider-Mion.
That's the northern south. The northern south, maybe. I don't know.
'Hey, all my friends out there looking for more spoiler room goodness, then why don't you check out our brand new Patreon page, patreon.com/specialmarkproductions, where you can get access to exclusive spoiler room episodes and a whole lot more. You can also find us on Facebook groups at SMPRD and on to Twitter at Special Mark Pro. Let your voice be heard and let us know what you would like to see in the spoiler room, as well as just how we're doing in general. We appreciate your support, and remember, in the spoiler room, the conversation is fresh, but we do spoil the movies.